this is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show, designed to help women overcome polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal and reproductive disorder that affects 1 in 10 women of childbearing age. We'll be bringing you the best information on fertility, hirsutism, weight loss, nutrition, mental health, and other conditions surrounding PCOS. The goal of the PCOS Challenge is to inspire and motivate you to make positive changes in your life. So tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. This is Sasha Adi. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge. Hi everyone, this is Sasha Adi and welcome to the PCOS Challenge radio show. Today our topic is creating a family through reproductive medicine. And our special guest is Dr. Jane Frederick. She's board certified in obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology and infertility. She has over 20 years of clinical experience as a physician and infertility specialist. Her active research interests include age and reproduction, male factor, egg freezing, and minimal invasive pelvic surgery. Dr. Frederick is the past president of the Pacific Coast Reproductive Society, and she reviews books for the Women Doctor's Guide to Health and Healing and the Couple's Guides to In Vitro Fertilization. She currently practices in Huntington Reproductive Center in Fullerton, California. Dr. Frederick, we are delighted to have you on the PCOS Challenge radio show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, no problem. So today our topic is creating a family through reproductive medicine. And I know that's your area of interest. So can you just tell us a little bit more about what you do in the area of infertility and reproductive medicine?
Yes, I've been practicing for quite a while now, for the last 20 years, and I've seen a huge change in the kinds of techniques that we can offer patients who are trying to get pregnant, not just polycystic ovarian patients, but patients with tubal disease, endometriosis, patients whose age may affect their status in terms of trying to conceive, patients with a uterus that's not shaped properly, and birth defects, for example. So there's been a lot that we have been able to study and investigate and provide certain tools and techniques for patients who are trying to conceive. And a lot of the new techniques that we use deal with some of the surgeries, the laparoscopic surgeries that we can offer patients, which is a minimally invasive type of technique. And it allows the doctor to be able to visualize the inside of the pelvic cavity and be able to diagnose and treat scarring and endometriosis and ovarian cysts. So that's come a long way. I also have a large in vitro fertilization center, which offers the high-tech solutions for patients who have been unable to conceive with low-tech options. And we've been very successful with our IVF program, includes egg donation and surrogacy programs. There are also a lot of ovulation medication that has come about over the last 20 years and has really been improved in terms of its efficacy and safety. And I can get a lot of patients to ovulate who weren't able to ovulate in the past, and also utilize artificial insemination as a low-tech option for patients with male factor. So there's a whole gamut of tools that we've been able to use for many, many years.
It sounds like it, and it sounds like it's more and more promising for couples who are trying to conceive. How many couples do you think are impacted by fertility issues?
Well, in the United States, the majority of patients that are impacted are the older patients who are trying to conceive in their late 30s, early 40s. That tends to be the trend that I'm finding in my practice. And as a woman ages, we tend to see a lot of effects on her reproductive health. And it's important that women realize that their biological clock is real, and that if there are problems or issues, or they are seeking advice, that they seek that advice soon. So I always recommend, if you're under age 35, that you try 1 year on your own, and then if you're unsuccessful, seek out the help of a specialist. And if you're over age 35, I recommend you wait 6 months and then seek out the help of a specialist. So the sooner that the patient comes to see me as a specialist, the better her prognosis is, the better that chance I have of partnering with her to help her have a pregnancy.
The PCOS Challenge radio show stems from a support system on PCOSChallenge.com, and many women there go there to support each other, and they blog about their fertility issues. And so a lot of women, you mentioned the age factor, a lot of women, even in their lower 20s, the earlier 20s, feel rushed, feel like they have to rush to try to conceive, especially because they have a PCOS diagnosis. And they really do dread the big 3-0 and 3-5. So it is real, but I'm sure for people with PCOS and other syndromes and diseases that could impact their fertility, maybe we have to think about this a little earlier than, say, other women who aren't impacted with PCOS or other fertility
issues.
Yes, I
would agree. The PCOS patient has some specific issues related to their endocrine status or their hormonal status, but a lot of those issues, surprisingly, can be helped very easily. And so only about 2% of all of the infertile patients in the country actually need in vitro or the high-tech. There's a lot of low-tech options that we can offer patients in terms who are trying to get pregnant. So your listeners should know that even though they are straddled with this diagnosis of PCOS, that it is very treatable. There are a lot of low-tech options, a lot of non-invasive types of procedures that we can offer them. And there's hope. There's definitely hope. My encouragement would be that they don't wait till they're 40 before they come in, because once the ovary gets over age 35, we do start to see a decline in the number of pregnancies, and so that can greatly affect their ability to conceive, regardless of what the diagnosis is or what I can offer them. So
okay.
I would say number one would be age, and if the patient's under age 35, she has some great chances in trying to have a pregnancy. And
even if she has PCOS.
Yes, even with the diagnosis of PCOS, there are a lot of my patients that get pregnant. They're very successful with just simple ovulation induction medicines like Clomid that can work, or the injectable medicines that also help ovulation. There are drugs such as metformin that has greatly helped a lot of the PCOS patients with their insulin status. And we have some very simple tools like artificial insemination, just combining the ovulation with the best sperm during that month that they're trying to conceive, and we do get very successful pregnancy rates. So the number one issue is age. Regardless of the PCOS, I would recommend that patients consider age first, but not give up hope just because they have this diagnosis. It's really something that's very, very treatable nowadays.
Well, that's good to hear. That's encouraging. So a woman with PCOS, can you tell us why PCOS will impact your fertility or possibly impact your fertility?
So a lot of times with PCOS, we see a patient who has irregular menstrual cycles, and they also may have a tendency to be hirsute or have excessive hair growth. They may be overweight and have some insulin-resistant problems. All of that is related to the hormones that may be not working in a PCOS patient. And many times we find that the male hormones are a lot higher in the bloodstream than the female hormones. And the male hormones may cause the abnormal hair growth. The male hormones may also cause the patient not to ovulate. And if we, if I utilize medicines that can adjust the hormones in that patient, birth control pills, for example, can help to drop the male hormone. Metformin is a oral medicine that can help adjust the glucose tolerance issues. And Clomid is another hormone, a tablet, that can help stimulate the eggs to ovulate. So just by using some simple medications, we can adjust the hormones and help that patient to ovulate. The other issues that should be realized or looked at are how good or bad is the male sperm. So a semen analysis would definitely give us an idea of whether the sperm is capable of producing a pregnancy. And I would say that about 40% of all couples with a diagnosis of infertility actually have a male factor problem. And the other test that I would run is a tubal dye test or a hysterosalpingogram. And that basically tells me that the tubes are actually open. Mm. Because if the tubes are blocked, then it doesn't matter that she has PCOS or a male factor. It means that we can't, that there's a blockage and that the egg sperm can't get to each other. And if the diagnosis of tubal blockage is made, I can perform a minimally invasive surgery called laparoscopy, which is an outpatient type of procedure. And I can actually go in there and unblock the tube and allow that patient to conceive on her own after surgery. So there's some minimal testing that I would order on anyone who has a suspicion that she might have a polycystic ovarian syndrome and is trying to have a baby.
Okay. And so you said 40% of couples diagnosed with infertility have some sort of male factor.
Yes, about 40%. And about another 30% have a problem with their tubes being blocked.
Mm. Okay.
So those are two critical tests that can be run to help us know if the patient falls in that category.
So I know a lot of women on PCOSChallenge.com who are trying to conceive, along with having fertility issues related to ovulation, they also do have some sort of male factor implication.
Yes.
As well. So when you have ovulation issues and male factor issues, I would suppose that dramatically decreases your chances of getting pregnant naturally.
Well, there are a lot of things that are attributed to infertility, such as the tubal blockage or the male factor and the ovulation problems. So, yes, it can make the problem seem more worrisome, but each of those factors can be treated successfully with low-tech options, and the patient can actually get pregnant in the first three cycles. So I would tell patients that no matter how many diagnoses they have, the most important thing is their age. Don't wait till they're 35 to 40. Come early if you can. And secondly, which problem can be treated successfully. So there's definitely hope, regardless of how many things are going on with that one patient.
We have a question from Melanie. She has PCOS and is trying to conceive with her husband. She wants to know, how can she know that she's ovulating for certain? She has used OPKs, but have heard that with PCOS, one can have the LH surges but not actually ovulate. And she just turned 27.
Yeah,
and she was told by her OB that it was good that she was trying because it only gets worse, and she'll have a lot of trouble like once she reaches a more advanced age.
Yeah, so in a regular cycling patient, somebody that has a cycle every month, the LH kit, the ovulation kit, is very helpful because usually we see a definite rise and a fall in the surge or the hormone that triggers ovulation, and that will show up in these urine test kits. But in a polycystic patient, where oftentimes the LH is elevated anyway, not related to ovulation, it might be tough to figure out when the ovukit is positive and when to have intercourse. Mm-hmm. So what I would tell this patient is if you're having regular cycles, I would start using the ovukit around day 10, and I would check it daily until there's a positive surge, a definite surge, and then have intercourse that night and the next night. But if you're having irregular cycles, that they don't come on a regular basis, then that ovukit may not help you, and it might be time to go in because you might not be ovulating, and that's where the Clomid would definitely come in handy.
Hmm. Okay. So let's I have a few more questions for you, but let's jump to the fertility medications or the types of fertility treatments. Can you go over the types of medications that you have in depth for fertility?
So the first drug of choice is a drug called metformin for the PCOS patient. Metformin is basically helping the insulin resistance for that patient. So we're trying, again, to regulate the glucose insulin levels in the PCO patients. And many times the metformin will actually cause the patient to become more regular and help her to ovulate. So metformin is a good drug to have on board. It does have some side effects, such as nausea, and that can be tough for patients to take. The other option is also a good diet and an exercise program. If a patient is overweight, she can utilize the diet and exercise as an alternative to metformin, because that the weight loss will also help that patient to ovulate.
Yeah, I have to say one thing about metformin. A lot of patients complain about the side effects. Some people think it's intolerable. So you're saying that a proper diet and exercise program in lieu of metformin may have the same effect?
Yes. In the patient who is overweight, she can successfully complete a good diet and exercise program and get her BMI or her normal weight status into a good range. She can actually benefit her glucose insulin level without the use of drugs. So diet and exercise is definitely an option if the metformin is intolerable. And I encourage all my infertility patients to do a good diet and exercise program, because regardless of what their infertility diagnosis is, you got to have a good foundation for the baby to grow in. If you're overweight, if you smoke, if you drink a lot of caffeine, those are not things that will allow your body to accommodate a healthy pregnancy. So I always encourage a good diet and exercise program in everybody. But especially in my PCOS patients, I've seen that the diet and exercise can actually help them ovulate. So it becomes a treatment as well for ovulation.
There is actually a large population of women who are not overweight who have PCOS. What do you suggest for them? I know proper diet and exercise is vital. However, they don't need to lose 10% of their body weight. What do you suggest for them?
So those patients may benefit more from the metformin, because now we're focused mainly on the glucose insulin level. And for those patients also who are not overweight, the clomiphene citrate, or Clomid, would be a good drug to start out on. And it's basically taking a pill for 5 days, starting on day 3 of the menstrual cycle. And the patient on Clomid is basically allowing the ovary in the polycystic patient to ovulate at least one egg. That is the goal. So when we do an ultrasound on the patient with PCOS, we notice that there's a lot of follicles in the ovary, but they're not ovulating because they're not getting a signal from the brain that says, please ovulate during the month. So those eggs are there, there's just no signal.
Those eggs, the pearl necklace,
yes,
form of eggs, and
yes,
so these are immature follicles, right?
Yes, they're immature. They aren't being stimulated because the hormones in that patient's body is not regulated.
Okay.
So one way to get around that problem is to give the drug called Clomid. And Clomid will go to the brain and tell the brain to stimulate the ovary so that one or two of those eggs will develop and ovulate. So Clomid is a way of bypassing that pearl of immature eggs that we see on ultrasound and basically allowing one or two of those to become mature, ripe, ovulatory eggs. Now, there's various doses of Clomid. So some patients do fine on one dose.
Mm-hmm.
Some patients need two or three doses to get them to ovulate. And I would always recommend that they have a physician monitoring them on Clomid, because you cannot tell if you're ovulating just by taking the drug. You may need to come back in, have an ultrasound by the specialist. And on the ultrasound, we can actually see the follicle growing, and we can see it getting bigger and measuring the hormone level called estradiol. And when we measure that, we watch it rise, and that's where we know that this patient is responding to the Clomid.
So the doctor monitors. I was under the impression that maybe you take the medication and then go back into your doctor's office for the next step. However, you do monitor the patient during each cycle?
Yes. So I recommend that if you have PCOS, the best way is to be seen by somebody who has familiarity with this disorder, this syndrome, knows how to prescribe Clomid, and can really pinpoint with monitoring on when that patient's ovulating. That way, the patient is maximally affected. She's not just at home taking this drug, not knowing what's happening, wondering, am I really going to ovulate or not? So get in touch with your specialist. The infertility specialist is somebody that has special training. We've gone to school more years than the OBGYN has, and we've really focused on the science of helping patients try to get pregnant and the science of why PCOS is an issue. So I think you should utilize the expertise of the specialist, and that will really increase the patient's chance that she'll get pregnant.
Ah, okay. So there is a question from the chat room. OB or RE?
Yeah.
Can you explain?
Good. That's a good question. So, the OBGYN is a general type of doctor that's had some general training in obstetrics and gynecology. So they do everything. The difference between the OBGYN and the specialist, the reproductive endocrine, REI specialist, is that we've gone beyond the OBGYN training. We've had three more years of specialty training just in infertility. So our focus is not on doing the deliveries anymore, but our focus is on getting the patient pregnant and sending her to the OBGYN as a second physician. So the trick is that you want to make sure that your REI or your doctor, your specialist, is board certified. That means that they've taken these special training years and they've passed the certification to show that they are trained and specialized in infertility. So not everybody who writes the word infertility on their card is truly an infertility specialist.
Right. And so how can people find out whether a person is board certified?
So they can either go online. There's a national practitioners data bank in the country. They have a website. You can go online. You can look at your physician's name and where they practice, and it will say in there board certified and what specialty. That's the best place. A lot of physicians also have websites, and I know on our website we list that we are board certified in OBGYN and board certified in REI or infertility. So I do think that if you have access to the specialist, you'll get pregnant quicker because you're going to someone who's totally focused on the infertility patient.
Okay.
You know, the biggest complaint that I get from patients is, well, how come my OB didn't send me to you?
Well, now I have a question about that. Do all insurance cover reproductive endocrinologists and infertility specialists?
That depends on what state the patient lives in and what kind of insurance she has. Now, in Massachusetts, infertility is covered regardless of who the patient is or what her insurance status is.
Mm.
Same with Illinois. In California, where I practice, only about 30% of my patients actually have infertility coverage through their employer. So it's not a mandated state where the state of California said, no, we think everybody should be covered. And as specialists, we're all lobbying to try to get coverage for everybody. We want to be like Massachusetts. We really want everybody to have the opportunity to come and be seen by the specialists and get the best care. So it is a problem state by state, and I would encourage patients to be more vocal on the fact that they do want mandatory coverage. That would be great if we could get that.
Yeah, that would be absolutely wonderful. Now, another question from the chat room had to do with Clomid, and she thinks that Clomid increases the chances of multiple births. Do you agree with that?
So the success rate of Clomid, in my hands at least, is about 10% per cycle will get pregnant with one baby, and 10% of that 10% end up with twins. Now, I rarely see more than twins with Clomid, and the reason why is because I give the lowest dose necessary, and I monitor that patient as a specialist, so I'm making sure that she only has two eggs. I'm not telling her to have intercourse and there's eight eggs in there.
Mm.
So that would not be good. So that's where I think that the monitoring is critical when you're on Clomid. And patients should be saying to their doctor, well, are you going to see me back to make sure that I am ovulating, number one, and that I only have one or two eggs because I don't want to have eight babies all at once.
Makes sense.
There is a risk of multiples, but if you are being treated by somebody who is experienced, a specialist, had special training, I think your risk of multiples is going to be very low with this medication. And that's a good thing. We don't want to produce the triplet and...
Yes, the multiples.
The goal. As a specialist, we really want a single healthy baby for everybody. And that's hopefully the patients are wanting that too.
Perfect. Now, are there other types of drugs? We went over metformin and Clomid. Are there other types of drugs? Okay.
So some patients don't respond to Clomid at all. So that is a very resistant ovary that polycystic ovary patients fall into that category. So, and when I say that they don't respond at all, it means that I gave them the regular dose of Clomid, we increased it, and we still nothing showed on ultrasound. There was no ovulation documented. So on those patients, I would recommend moving on to the injectable medicines, the gonadotropins. And these are injections that are subcutaneous that the patient takes on her own at home for about a week. And she comes back in, again, for ultrasound monitoring and a blood test. And I can definitely see a better response in those patients who didn't respond at all to Clomid.
Now, is there a possibility of error of, someone not giving themselves injections the proper way?
Well, many of these injections, they've been perfected greatly over the last 20 years that I've been practicing medicine. So now the injection, it looks like a pen, and with a small subcutaneous, like a diabetic needle. And I tell the patient to dial up the dose like a pen, and then like a click of a pen, they inject themselves into the sub-Q part of the abdomen. So it's become very easy. It's no longer that you have to mix in like a chemistry set. That's how it was 50 years ago. These drugs are a lot more efficient, a lot more patient-friendly, and a lot more safe. So,
so we're injecting these into the abdomen. So that... is obesity a factor?
Well, definitely, yes. The patient that has a high BMI or not in the normal weight range might need more drug because of the issue with fat tissue there. But still, there is a dose that they will respond to.
Okay.
So I'm again emphasizing that good diet and exercise is key regardless of what the diagnosis is, because that will definitely increase your ability to get pregnant, to ovulate, and have a much healthier pregnancy.
Now, is there ever a time when a fertility specialist will refuse to give drugs to patients until they lose a certain amount of weight?
Well, I think that it's important that the patient be realistic about her weight loss. So if somebody weighs 300 pounds, that's a very dangerous level of weight to be at to try to have a baby.
Yes, and there are probably other factors like diabetes and
yes.
other things that come into play.
High blood pressure. At 300 pounds, we tend to see birth defects in babies. Mm. We see more miscarriages. We see more increased risk of C-sections, which can cause problems afterwards. So, yes, there is an upper limit of weight and a BMI that can be calculated based on the patient's height and weight. You can go online and they can actually look at what their BMI is and whether they're in the obese category or the extreme obese. Those patients, I think, really need to be counseled in a nutrition program first before they try to decide to have a pregnancy, because you're just complicating a lot more issues if you try to have a baby at that weight. A lot of people tell me, you know, I've always been this weight. I've always been overweight, and I've never been able to get to the point of where I would like to be. And the PCOS, it is very, very difficult.
It's very difficult to lose and maintain
yes.
a certain
right.
weight.
It,
right.
You cannot deny that patient has more problems with her weight than the average patient who's not PCOS. So I don't discount that in my patient population, but I do try to help them, you know, refer them to the nutritionist, refer them to a weight management program. Many of the hospitals have that, and just encouraging them to stay on top of it, to try as best they can, but to definitely continue forward in having that child. So it shouldn't be that the weight is the only reason why you can't get pregnant, but we know that we can't deny that the weight plays a role.
Okay, great. Now, we have metformin, Clomid, and injectables.
Yes, so those are the most common medications that we utilize for trying to make someone ovulate, especially in the PCOS patient. I also check her prolactin level. That's another hormone. And if the prolactin level is elevated, there's a drug called Parlodil that can lower her prolactin level. And the other test that should be run is an FSH level on day 3, a follicle-stimulating hormone. That level on day 3 of the cycle will also tell us how good or bad the quality of eggs are that are remaining. So FSH is a hormone that the body produces. It's always drawn when the patient is menstruating, and it's a very good index point of what the reserve is left of the ovaries, of the eggs in the ovary.
Okay, well, I had a question from Ashanti from PCOSChallenge.com about that. She wanted to know how to find out before she has any procedure if her eggs are healthy.
Yes.
Is there a way to do that?
So, yes, that's a very good question. And I would have her ask her doctor if she can have a hormone level checked on day 3 of her cycle. And the FSH level should be less than 10 as a good indicator that there are eggs left in her body.
Hmm. So FSH of less than 10
right,
is a good indicator of
right.
viable eggs.
Viable eggs, and we do it on day 3 of the menstrual cycle.
Okay.
And I'm sure that if she asks her doctor, that, you know, the doctor should be able to comply with that request, because that's just a simple blood test.
Okay, so now a lot of women have gone the medication route. Maybe they got fed up, and now they want to try natural remedies. They want alternative remedies. Are there any natural medications or remedies that you would suggest or endorse
yeah.
for women?
So one of the natural remedies that I've been utilizing for all patients, not just PCOS, but all of my infertile couples, is acupuncture. We found that acupuncture doesn't have any herbs or hormones related to it. It's just using needles to relax the patient, and needles are placed at different parts of the body. And again, these are very thin needles, not needles that we use to draw blood from the patient. But the acupuncturist can actually help to relax that patient. So when she's undergoing treatment, the relaxation issue is critical. And we know that stress plays a big role in infertility.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I see a lot of women blogging about how frustrated they are and how unhappy they are with how much sex has become somewhat of a chore because they're trying to achieve this goal and they're frustrated. And I do realize that many fertility specialists are referring patients to acupuncturists.
Yes, I actually have an acupuncturist that comes to my office for patients who are undergoing procedures such as artificial insemination or an in vitro cycle. And they will actually come to my office and give the patient a treatment before her procedure, and then I'll do the procedure, and then they'll have a post-treatment in the office. So we try to make it as patient-friendly as possible.
That sounds very efficient. You have your acupuncturist come in and relax the patient and perform whatever procedure afterwards.
And I have seen so many patients that didn't get success somewhere else, or they had their first cycle with me, it didn't work. Second cycle, they said, okay, I'm going to try acupuncture. And you know what? The second cycle works. They're more relaxed, perhaps. Maybe they would have gotten pregnant anyway. But you just never know. And with the amount of time and money that it takes to undergo treatment, I always try to maximize every cycle for every patient, because the goal is really to get them pregnant so they can move on with their life and no longer be infertile.
Absolutely, absolutely. Melanie is asking if she can rely on the home test from First Response for fertility for checking the FSH levels.
No, I wouldn't rely on that home test because you really do need a level, a blood level of less than 10 to tell you if you're normal or not, if you have a good reserve. The home test doesn't give you that verification, and I would recommend that she skip the home test and just go straight to the doctor for the blood work. It's a simple blood test that can be done on the third part of her cycle, third day, and I think it will give her a lot more information, more reliable.
Yes, that absolutely. And I have a question from Cindy. Cindy lives in Canada. She's religious, and she's using the natural family planning method. She'll not opt for drugs or assisted reproductive technology, and she wants to know what other natural ways to induce ovulation or help with ovulation. She notes that her temps are very low and erratically spikes, usually 36.1, 36.7. Her LH and FSH are low, and testosterone is normal to the high end of normal.
So what she could try is the diet and exercise approach, drop the weight. That's one natural way of getting the body's hormones more active and more homeopathic. Hopefully, if the weight drops, the ovulation may occur. She could try the OvuKit, but as we already discussed in a PCOS patient, it may be difficult to get a good reading on the OvuKit.
Right.
But I would say that the natural part of trying to get pregnant when you don't ovulate or you have irregular cycles is very hard. It's very frustrating. And that's where I think a simple visit to the specialist may impact her greatly. It may not be her at all, though. It may be her husband's sperm.
Yeah, there's also a male factor involved.
So
in
that
her case
plays half a role in it, yeah. That she may actually be okay, but his sperm is too low to fertilize. So then nothing you do at home is going to help. You definitely need some techniques at the office that can help her. The other test that we recommended is that dye test, the tubal dye test, because if her tubes are blocked, then again, no home remedy is going to get past that. So before people try any home remedies, I would get testing done first to rule out some of these other things that are definitely common in all infertile couples, not just the PCOS patients.
Great point. Okay, so now can we move on to the artificial insemination? After you've tried the drugs for some people, is that the next step?
Yes. So assuming that the sperm is good, you know, that the sperm has adequate numbers, then if the ovulation medicines are not working, I would try the combination of the ovulation drug and artificial insemination. So that allows the best sperm to be extracted gathered up in the test tube after he gives us a sample, and we can separate the dead sperm from the live sperm and then just allow the good quality sperm to get closer to the egg through artificial insemination. And basically, that's just like a pap smear in the office. You don't need surgery, don't need anesthesia. I insert a speculum, and I then place the washed sperm that has been specially prepared at the right time of her cycle. I place it right into the uterus, and the sperm still has to swim to the egg, but by the time the patient leaves my office, the sperm is already there. That's how quick it works.
Really?
That's how quick. Okay. So you only need a few minutes, and then the sperm has actually gotten to the spot. So I think that it's a very good technique that we can use for patients who have been unsuccessful.
Okay. Great. And so now we move on to assisted reproductive technology.
Right. So that basically falls into the category of in vitro fertilization, the high-tech procedures. And with IVF, the goal is to enhance the egg and sperm fertilization. So the patient is still taking injectable medicines, but instead of producing two eggs, now we're trying to produce 10 eggs. And all 10 eggs will be harvested through an egg retrieval, an egg harvest. That's done in my office under IV sedation, so the patient needs to be asleep for that process to occur. But I go in vaginally with an ultrasound-guided tool, and I can actually harvest the eggs. So that's the first step. Once the eggs are in the test tube, I then allow the sperm and egg to fertilize in the test tube. And then I watch the fertilized egg grow into an embryo. And that takes about 3 to 5 days in the laboratory. Once the embryo has formed, then I bring the patient back into the office, and I would usually transfer the embryos into her uterus. And the number of embryos to transfer will depend on how old she is and the quality of her embryos, how many good quality embryos are there. So in somebody who's under age 35, only 2 embryos should be transferred because those embryos are usually of better quality. In somebody who's 35 to 40, we usually recommend 3 to 4 embryos be transferred. And in somebody who's over 40, we usually, the guidelines are maybe 5 or 6 embryos to be transferred. So as a patient gets older, the success rate of IVF will drop, and that's why we end up putting in more embryos in the later years and fewer embryos in the younger years.
Okay, can you please repeat the number of embryos per? Okay.
Yes. So under age 35, we normally transfer 2 embryos. Between age 35 and 40, the number to transfer is anywhere from 3 to 4 embryos. And over age 40, we usually transfer 5 to 6 embryos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a patient is lucky enough, fortunate enough to have leftover embryos, I would recommend that she freeze those embryos so that she can have them for future attempts, and they would still give her a chance for another pregnancy down the road or a second baby if she's lucky to get pregnant with the first one. Then she doesn't have to come back and go through the whole process of harvesting and fertilizing the eggs all over. So freezing an embryo has become a very good option for those patients who have leftover embryos.
What would prevent a patient from having any good eggs to harvest?
Well, if she doesn't respond well, for example, if the FSH level is high, that would indicate that the number or quality of her eggs are low. And that would show up in the fact that there are no eggs to harvest. Usually, I see that in my older patients, my over 40 population. So that would be unusual to find in the 30-year-olds, but that's why I always recommend we evaluate the patient with an FSH level. So it's usually age-related in terms of why the eggs are not developing or why they're not fertilizing or becoming embryos.
One of our women on PCOSChallenge.com, she just shared with me she tried to do IVF but was unsuccessful because there were no egg to harvest. And she is, I think, in her early 30s, 33, I believe.
My question would be, did they ever check her FSH level to assess what her ovarian function is? That would be a good thing to go back and look at, because if she's going through an early menopause, it will show up in that FSH level, and it may be over 10 on different occasions, and that would definitely explain.
Explain. Okay, I have some more questions for you from listeners, and
sure.
Holly wants to know if she can get to a point where she's ovulating through her through diet changes and natural supplements. Does this increase the chance of IVF being successful? She also has male factor issues as well.
Yes. So good diet, exercise, taking prenatal vitamins, all of those will increase the chance of success with in vitro. We also mentioned acupuncture as an adjunct to those patients undergoing IVF. So yes. I would definitely stay on that good regimen because a healthy lifestyle is the number one importance in trying to have a baby, regardless of what your diagnosis is.
Okay. And so another question that comes up a lot on PCOSChallenge.com with the Trying to Conceive group is when should they have intercourse? I know you mentioned it earlier, but a lot of people seem to be confused about this. Maybe it's not being explained well, but people are really confused about when to have intercourse to maximize the possibility of getting pregnant.
So if you're using an ovulation predictor kit, the best time to have intercourse is the day that it turns positive and the next day. That's the best time. And in a normal ovulation cycle, a 30-day cycle, ovulation usually occurs around day 14 of the cycle. That would be mid-cycle. So we always want to see from the OvuKit what day is it actually a surge, and then going from there. So that the night of the surge and the day after that is probably the best. I often find that patients overdo the intercourse. So they have intercourse for an entire week, and then the OvuKit turns positive. And the problem with that philosophy is, because they don't want to miss it, I understand that, but the sperm count will drop every time you have intercourse on a daily basis. So by the time the seventh day came around and it was really the best time, the sperm may have been at its lowest point.
Wow.
Because a man needs to, the sperm needs to recover, and sometimes it takes a few days for that recovery process to occur. So I recommend only having intercourse when the ovulation looks like you've gotten the right day, and then only having intercourse on those two nights to get the best sperm, the best account, the best moving swimmers at the right place. So too much intercourse will drop the sperm count down, and then you're not really maximizing your chance.
Yeah, I do understand that a lot of women are worried about missing the chance, especially if they don't know really when they ovulate.
Yeah.
You know, like in the PCOS community, a lot of women have issues with that. So, and then they may miss their chance.
Yeah, so I do recommend that if you're not having a regular ovulation cycle, I recommend that you get help with a specialist who can actually monitor you and do ultrasounds, do some blood work, to really help figure out when's the right day to have intercourse.
Okay. Melanie, she was explaining that her LH surges usually around day 26, but the past month she tested positive on day 18, and then they had intercourse and tried, but the pregnancy test was negative. So she's feeling frustrated at this point.
So don't give up, Melanie. I would tell her to perhaps day 18 is too late in the cycle, that the ovary is ovulating much too late, especially on day 26. I would recommend a Clomid to help the ovulation occur around day 14, so it's earlier, because many times the uterus needs to be in synchrony with the ovary that's ovulating. So if the uterus is ready on day 14, but the ovary decides to ovulate on day 18, then you can see there's a out-of-synchrony cycle, and then you don't have a pregnancy. So not to give up, I would go in, seek some help, make sure that the other factors have been looked at, the tubes and the sperm factors have been evaluated, and then if everything looks good, just start on the Clomid cycles with the specialist.
Okay, she said even if her cycles are 34 to 40 days?
Yeah, 34 to 40 days is way too long. Those are probably not good ovulation cycles, and the uterus and the ovary are out of sync, and that's You got to be in sync in order for that pregnancy to occur.
I think she was seeing an OBGYN, and now she says she's going to set up an appointment with the reproductive endocrinologist.
Great. That's the best thing you can do. The OBGYNs are maybe the first starting point for many patients, but unfortunately they may not know enough to get that patient to the specialist. And I always get that question asked, well, how come they didn't send me to you sooner, Dr. Frederick? How come they didn't tell me to come here a lot? I don't want to do 12 cycles of Clomid and find out that I should have been seeing you a lot sooner. So I'm always trying to empower the patient to go ahead, ask those questions. And if you're not happy with the answers, just seek out the specialist yourself, because I think you might get a second opinion. You might find that you'll be more focused on the patient who's trying to get pregnant. I think the OBGYNs do a great job out there, but there is a difference in training level that comes with being an infertility specialist, an REI, and I think that we can actually offer more to the patient and get them pregnant faster so they go back to the OBGYN for that delivery.
Great. So I went to the website havingbabies.com, and that's the Huntington Reproductive Center website, and I read about IVF and the three components that increase the probability of IVF success. And one was a technically uncomplicated embryo transfer. Would you be able to explain what that is for us?
So a lot of times the cervix can be an issue in trying to place the embryos back into the uterus. And one way that I use to evaluate the cervix is a procedure called a mock transfer. So prior to starting an IVF cycle, I would have a patient come in on a certain day, and I would actually measure the uterus and figure out which catheter is going to be the least traumatic in getting those embryos. And I map that out in the patient's chart before we even get to the transfer day. That way, when the transfer day comes, I have the map of my mock transfer, and I have an ultrasound person that's guiding, has an ultrasound on the abdomen, is guiding my transfer in. So we use those tools, the mock transfer and the ultrasound, as the tools to have the least traumatic transfer.
Also, receptive intrauterine environment.
Yes, the uterus is always critical in terms of implantation. So there are specific medicines that I use during the ovulation cycle, during IVF, to prepare the uterus. And when the patient is undergoing a cycle, she'll see me monitoring the uterus and measuring it, as well as measuring the ovary, because if the uterus is not appropriate size or thickness, it will not allow the embryo to implant. And on the protocols that I use in my practice, I generally see very good response to the uterus, and I know that that's helping the patient's pregnancy. So it's important that we don't ignore the uterus. We always look at it on ultrasound. We usually evaluate it prior to IVF with hysteroscope, which is a little telescope that goes inside the uterus. It gives me a good idea of whether this patient has polyps or scar tissue or something that needs to be taken care of right away before she even has her first embryo transfer. So that uterus needs to be looked at, checked into before the IVF cycle starts.
Okay. Well, Dr. Frederick, we're running out of time. You have been really informative. People are really receiving you and your message well. Can you please tell us how, if someone wanted to set up an appointment with you, how they can go about doing that?
Yes, so you can go to my website, www.havingbabies.com. I'm in the Orange County offices. You can read my biography there. I have an office in Fullerton and one in Laguna Hills, California, in the Southern California area. And you can go ahead and call the office and make an appointment with my scheduler. I have lots of openings in the next 2 weeks. I try to make myself as available as possible for patients. If you're out of the state or out of the country, I also do phone consultations, and I review patients' records and just give them a second opinion on the phone with what I would recommend that they would do, so that way they have more questions that they can ask their specialist near their home. But I do see a lot of patients from across the country, from out of the country. I treat many patients, not just in the general Southern California area. And I also have an email that patients can access me through, and it's on the website, www.havingbabies.com. We have a chat room where we answer questions routinely from patients that are general infertility questions. I would love to get in touch with you that way as well. So I hope this has been beneficial. I would tell everybody, stay in it. Don't give up. There's a lot of hope out there, especially for the PCOS. And I'm hoping that you'll find your dream come true with that next pregnancy.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Frederick, and it's been a pleasure having you on the PCOS Challenge Radio Show.
Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. Tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. Also, be sure to join our social network at PCOSChallenge.com and sign up for our newsletter. This is Sasha Ati. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.